Hello and welcome to another episode of Why We Love. My name's David.
And I'm Moxie.
And this week we are talking about Hereditary.
We should probably mention now, there will be spoilers. So if you are listening and you haven't seen Hereditary, beware. because we're about to ruin it for you. Well, not ruin it, but we're going to talk about it. So be prepared. Is all I'll say.
Yeah.
So before we started the podcast, I was saying to David that I had a bunch of like bullet points about the film that I wanted to talk about, but no real structure. And David's first note was, tell the people.
The first 45 minutes are good.
I'm just going to let that hang in the air there for a moment, like the bad fart that it is. I'm so interested in this because I personally love Hereditary from start to finish. I think it's fascinating. But I do recall that you, when I mentioned, should we do Hereditary on the podcast, you were very forthright in your opinion that you didn't like it. Is that fair to say?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. So, the story of Hereditary is a story, I would say, of grief, of tragedy, mixed up in a lovely horror package that has just about everything I'm looking for in a horror. And I'm fascinated to hear your thoughts on it. Defend yourself.
Well, no, credit where credit's due. The first 45 minutes I do think are very good.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about the first 45 minutes?
I like the setup.
Mm-hmm.
I like that there's, well, like the opening shot, for example, that is, where it goes into the dollhouse and then the dollhouse becomes the real house. That is just like, that's just like an interesting, it's just,
it's so well done, isn't it?
Yeah, like visually striking sort of thing.
Oh, definitely. And also just as a quick bullet point that I made that actually ties into that opening shot is that it really reminded me of, the Orson Welles film, Citizen Kane, and a couple of Hitchcock films that have a similar sort of setup where the camera's moving forward and things move apart and suddenly you're inside of the building or the room or whatever. And I really liked, I liked that initial image in the film of the doll's, well, it's not really a doll's house, is it? But you know what I mean. Let's call it a doll's house.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But it moves into that.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked the setup that it was... Tony Collette's mother had just passed away and there was all these people she didn't recognise at the funeral, and she has a really creepy daughter. She's so creepy. The fact that the first half is so focused on grief and kind of the like unwillingness to come to terms with it, because she doesn't go through the boxes properly.
She's in denial.
Yeah, and then skip forward to the ending of the 45 minutes where the daughter's is having the allergic reaction to nuts and sticks her head out the car window.
Yeah.
And that what I really like about that is you get the, you don't see, but you get the sudden, like, just the loud crack sound.
Mm-hmm.
and then it's just there's noise like the car moving, but there's no music or dialogue until the following morning, where Toni Collette's like crying, and like midway through her crying, you just see a really quick flash of this severed head in the middle of the road.
Crawling with ants.
Like, has got to a stage of decomposition very quickly. But
well, I wouldn't say that. You know, ants are ants. They're going to crawl over anything that's been out for, you know, 20 minutes. So I wouldn't say it's decomposing already, but yeah, that it's interesting that you mentioned that, actually, because that was based on like a true story, that incident where she gets decapitated.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. There were two guys who were at a party and who drank too much. And the guy in the back was trying to sober up. So he stuck his head out the window while the guy was driving, and he hit a pole and, you know, head came off. And the guy, I think he crashed into a what do you call it, a street lamp, and then just sort of fell asleep because he was so drunk and didn't really realise that he'd killed his friend until the next day.
That's not fun.
No, I mean, it sounds a bit like an urban legend, doesn't it? But apparently it's based on a real incident.
Yeah, no, I mean, it does sound like one of those things that, like, everyone's got a friend who knows a friend who...
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's got that quality to it. But allegedly, supposedly, it's true. Pardon me. And, the film is like a family drama, really, with the exception of maybe a couple of what appear to be ghostly appearances. It does play out as like a straight family drama, and then it ratchets up the horror elements.
Yeah.
Yes, it plays out like a family drama and then ratchets up the horror. But so what's the 45 minute? Is that when Charlie's decapitated?
It's just after Toni Collette is crying. That cutoff point, yeah.
Right. So at that point, you're just done with it.
It's not like a hard cutoff point. I don't like if I didn't know what the clock was saying, I wouldn't suddenly get to that minute and just like vomit. I would like, but like it, after that point, nothing sufficiently like good happens. Particularly, what? I mean, there's the thing where she. The fight at the dinner table where she like shouts, "I am your mother," that bit I kind of like, but apart from that, no.
So not even like the creepy stuff that happens with the friend that she meets at the grief counseling session, I've forgotten her name, when she meets her and there's this kind of seance moment and connects with the other side. And her cutting her own head off? Like, that doesn't thrill you?
No, I've already seen one decapitation, and that was like...
Yeah, but she's doing it to herself! And yeah, she's floating!
Yeah, but she's... It's... That's not... I mean... In films, if done well, I suppose that could be creepy. But in this film, they've already done something that's like horrifying. It's horrifying because it's an accident and because...
And you don't see it coming.
And you don't see it coming. Whereas this is... And it's so telegraphed that she's like evil as well.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, you have one of these doormats. That my mum had. She had some that were really similar to this, but it can't be the same one, can it? Probably not. No, this is fine. So it just, yeah.
Okay. And you're not interested in the demon payment and the cult that were making all of these things happen? And none of that did it for you?
No, not really.
Wow. Okay. Well, it did all kinds of things for me.
Okay.
Because, yeah, first of all, Charlie being decapitated, I did not see coming. And it was really clever of the marketing people to focus the, you know, the posters and the trailers on Charlie, because we feel like she's going to be the one that we follow throughout the whole story.
Yeah.
She's our protagonist. And then, yeah, she gets decapitated. You're like, oh my God, that was so unexpected. I'm glad that wasn't spoiled for me on the internet. And yeah, I mean, yes. Okay. The doormat issue with the woman from the grief counseling thing is a bit over the, what's the, maybe too on the nose, or just like you said, oh, you know, my mother made things that were very similar to these. It's very strange that you should have one too. But if we ignore that one moment, I think the rest of it plays out really well. I love the idea of the cult. I love the idea that, like, I mean, this is a genuine tragedy in terms of none of these characters had any choice. Like, this was always what was going to happen. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Well, do I agree that it was always going to happen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I know this for a fact because for the last 10 minutes of the film, they explain it to me in grinding detail.
See, I remember you saying that. And when I watched it again, I was like, aside from her saying, like, hi, Payman, we've found you a male body, I hope you're happy now, sort of thing, I don't think they explain too much. They don't really explain anything.
It wasn't that they went, oh, we found you a male body. It was that they were like, we found you this body that you didn't like this body, so we killed this body and then put you in this body. This body's neat. It was that I...
Mm. Okay. Oh, I just think that's so interesting, because I was literally like, keep talking, tell me more. Which is weird, because normally, like you, I don't like having things explained to me. It's often unnecessary. Just tell me the story and I'll put together what I need to. And in a weird way, it reminds me a little bit of The Lords of Salem, in that I'm so into it that I'm like, just keep talking, just keep telling me things. Tell me about your cult. Tell me about your demon. Are there other demons? Tell me more. Just tell me everything. Show me stuff. I was so into it that I didn't want to let go. I was like, just keep telling me shit, because this is really cool.
It's interesting you've said that, actually, because now where my argument is obviously going to fall down is that I really, really like the film The Witch, which does not do a lot of explanation, particularly, especially regarding that old woman who lives in the woods at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of just gloss over that. So, but in terms of, like, horror stuff, you like The Lords of Salem?
I do. It's... 100%.
Oh, fuck, I don't want to carry on with this sentence now.
Oh, go on, you've started it... now.
It's probably out now. I haven't seen all of his films, so I can't comment. But out of the ones I have seen, it's probably my least favorite Rob Zombie film.
Okay.
And actually, no, because it was a unique vision, so I kind of appreciate it for that. My least favorite is probably Halloween 2.
Oh my God, David!
because that is just filled with, like, I don't know where I'm going.
You are
with...
breaking my heart right now. No, that's not true. The Lords of Salem is probably my favorite Rob Zombie film.
Oh, sorry.
It's quite all right. I don't take it personally. He's not for everyone. I get that. But it is my favorite, and it does have, or rather, Hereditary does have shades of The Lords of Salem in it, in terms of the aesthetic and also that strange, oh God, I can't quite, the damn, words have just escaped me. There's just a quality to it that I feel is shared, shall we say. We're not going to talk about Halloween 2 because, no. We're not going to get into that. I love it. Let's just leave it there for now.
I am sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. We're just going to move on. It's fine.
In my defense, I will say, of people who criticize Rob Zombie on the internet, I'm probably the politest one of those you're ever going to meet. So.
Oh, I'm sure you are. I've had people say some truly over-the-top ridiculous stuff. But we can always do a Halloween podcast where we talk about it. Because okay. It's amazing. But whatever. But back to Hereditary. What were we saying? Oh, that's right, the witch. See, again, that shares a quality with Hereditary. Not in terms of plot or theme necessarily, but just a certain quality that I can't quite put into words right now. Let me look through some of my notes here and see if I have anything to jump in here with. Speaking of Halloween, actually, ha ha ha.
Halloween the film or Halloween the holiday?
The film, the original, John Carpenter. Right.
Okay.
In the original Halloween, there's a scene with Laurie while she's at school, and the school teacher is talking about, I can't remember what the story is. It may well be a Greek tragedy, but he's talking about a story and talking about the inevitability of things. And in Hereditary, they have a similar shot of the boy whose name I have forgotten, Peter. Yeah, Peter. He's at school. Yeah. And the teacher is talking about Pericles, I think, or Sophocles, and talking about choice and, you know, destiny and all that sort of jazz. And I thought that was kind of cool. That was a little wink and a nod to Halloween. So there you go.
Okay.
I've connected something to our random Halloween tangent. Ooh, one of the things I liked is there are loads of, how can I put it? Like, I don't want to say occult imagery, but fairly similar style throughout the house. So in the hallways, for example, the wallpaper has a very distinct pattern on it, which is reflected in Charlie's bedpost, her like metal bed frame. There's like these swirly kind of patterns going on. And I felt like the cult itself was very much a part of the house.
Okay.
I mean, there's even a bit in the film when no one's supposed to be home, but you can hear like footsteps. And I feel like it's the cult is always there. I mean, there's even one of Peter's school friends is in this cult and is naked upstairs in the treehouse. That's cool. One of his school friends was in the cult. That's cool. I mean, come on. That's pretty cool. That's pretty creepy. That someone you've been mates with for years has always been working towards your demise. I think that's pretty cool. What else? Now, of course, there's been a lot of talk about sort of the trans view of the film, because Charlie sort of presents a somewhat ambiguous identity, shall we say. You know, she dresses in really what we would assume to be masculine type clothes, you know, the oversized hoodie, baggy jeans, very shapeless stuff. You know, her hair is always in front of her face. And she doesn't seem to be interested in your typical teen girl shenanigans. You know, she's not playing with makeup. She's not playing with dolls. She's playing with dead birds. Again, cool. So anyway, there's a reading of the film that suggests that, well, not even suggests, but just that the trans experience was somewhat reflected in Charlie. But there have been other people who have said, no, that's not really true at all. And obviously it's not something I can speak to because I'm not trans. But I thought it was really interesting. I read a couple of articles and they laid out some pretty interesting arguments to suggest that, yeah, they could see something reflected back at them through Charlie. I mean, she's Charlie, not whatever her, you know, birth name is.
Oh, right, yeah. You always, like, I mean, I have to say, when we research for the podcast, I'm going to be brutally honest, my research is I watch the film. So
right.
you always, like, bring, and it's good in a way because it means that I have to, like, you know, actually think. So you always, like, bring, like, interesting stuff, like, to the discussion that I not thought about. And
thank you.
Oh, no, it's and this was probably one of them, but I mean, the thing, you know, you said about Nick Wolff being too old. I think Charlie looks too young.
Really?
I could, now you say, oh, she's a teen girl. I was like, oh yeah, cool, of course, because she was like at the school. But if like even watching that happen, it, like her being at school, I was like, I still like didn't really comprehend that she was a like teenager, because I think she looks a lot younger.
Well, perhaps, I mean, that could just be because the actress does look younger than she actually is. Millie Shapiro, that's her name, isn't it? I'm just going to check how old she is because I have no idea. And maybe she's more like 12 going on 13 or something. Or maybe that's just because she dresses the way she does and acts the way she does. She's very nonverbal. That shapes the way that you see her and you think, oh, she must be, you know, 11, not 14 or whatever.
Well, I was going to say that was my point was going to be that I, because of the way she dressed, I'd always like I was seeing her as a younger person.
Yeah.
But you saying about there's a reading of it of her being trans, where I was like, oh, okay. And it was a thing that I just hadn't thought about, just because I'd interpreted it differently because I don't have like that viewpoint of the world. Yeah.
Apparently she's 18, so she would have been around about 15, 16 when she shot the film. So yeah, she is a teenager. And I, like I say, I'm not the best person to talk about this because I'm not trans, and I, as much as I know, there's a bunch of stuff I don't know and would probably get wrong.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that there was something in the character in terms of whatever. I swear they mention her birth name at some point, but let's say it's Charlotte. The grandmother's influence in trying to make her as male as possible influenced this name Charlie, and to the point where the grandmother had made those weird foot, you know, the placemats that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
But it says Charles on it, not Charlie. And then you've got the fact that she, you know, her mum says something about how she was a tomboy when she was her age. But it doesn't seem to connect in the same way that, you know, I was a tomboy when I was a kid. When she said, you know, I was a tomboy too. I don't know. It felt like there was something more going on, which obviously we found out there is. She has a demon inside her.
Yeah.
And I very clearly do not want to make the association between trans people and demons. I'm not suggesting that there's anything to do with that. And actually, that was something that was brought up in one of the articles I read, in that Charlie is still the villain of the piece because she is possessed by this demon, which, you know, if you are taking a trans reading of it, makes her a villain and a trans experience. And that's not great.
Yeah.
You know, because trans people are stereotypically in movies villains, and that's not cool. So, yeah. Just something to think about, something to throw out there. I found it very interesting. So that's something. What else? I mean, I think it's a really interesting look at grief anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, yes, they have the scapegoat of mental illness throughout the film, which, I mean, I have mental illness issues, so I know that a lot of people feel a bit iffy about that in film. It's often sort of stigmatized and made into this thing. But I personally didn't mind that as the scapegoat, because for the first, I don't know, hour of the film or something, you could pass off what's going on in that house as both grief and mental illness.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the ghosts of the grandmother, and then Peter starts seeing Charlie after she dies. And even the mother in that grief counselling session says, you know, my brother was schizophrenic. He accused my mother of trying to put people inside him. We now know that he wasn't schizophrenic, and that was her mother trying to, you know, invoke the demon into him.
Yeah.
And just with Toni Collette's character, and the fact that she's doing these weird, like, she tried to kill her kids, but accidentally when she was asleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, there's, you could pass that off as something else, when really, in a very twisted, dark way, she was probably trying to save them. Again, tragic. Like, she could have murdered her two children, which is awful, but
yeah,
letting them live means that they end up dead anyway, and are being used as a vessel for evil. Yeah. Lost my train of thought there to some extent. And circling back to Charlie, just very quickly, we never actually meet Charlie, if you think about it. We don't know what Charlie's like. We know what Payman's like, but we don't know what Charlie's like. Charlie might have been the girliest girl to have ever lived. Or she might have been a tomboy, or she could have been anything. She could have been very quiet. She could have been loud. She could have been, you know, all sorts of things. But we don't know, because we never met her, because Payman's already inside her from the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Interesting. What else? I mean, the dad, I really like Gabriel Byrne, but his character is a very typical dad character, don't you think?
Yeah.
Very ineffectual, very passive, and just doesn't do a hell of a lot. And I appreciate that, you know, in those circumstances, he was probably internally crumbling just as much as his wife and his kid.
Yeah.
And doesn't have the quote unquote luxury of being able to wallow in his emotions, because everybody else is, and he has to be the strong one.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that. But overall, he's a bit of a meh. And when he gets set on fire and burns to death, I was meh. It was a cool special effect, but as for the character, I didn't really care one way or the other.
Fair. I mean, yes. He was an old guy in a cardigan and glasses, like, cool.
Yeah, like, yeah, just letting everything wash over him and let the mum deal with it, let his wife deal with it.
Yeah.
Just typical movie dad. What else? I like that Toni Collette's character, is it Annie? I think it's Annie.
Yeah.
I liked her job of building these little scenes, and how, like, she's kind of channeling her grief into these little art pieces.
Yeah.
Particularly when she's lost it a little bit, bless her, when she starts recreating the lamppost and the car and Charlie's head and all the rest of it. That's a step. And even the dad recognizes that and gets annoyed. And again, you can put that down to a sort of mental illness type thing. She's depressed, she's not dealing with things in a healthy way, blah blah blah. Yeah, I've forgotten what I was saying. That's it. The little things she makes, the sets, the scenes. Yeah. I don't know what you call them, miniatures. Anyway, I like that a lot of what she was making was reflecting what was going on around her.
Yes. Yeah, that was good.
What else? I suppose there's the strange light that pops up now and again. The sort of, what's the word? Unembodied? That's not right.
Disembodied.
Thank you. This sort of disembodied light that's Payman, that flicks up every now and again, was kind of cool. It was a cool way of showing that, you know, there was evil around without sort of spooky, I don't know, more ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
It was quite an interesting decision to go with, let's have a weird sort of neon kind of light that flickers and, you know, leads people to where they need to be or possesses people and et cetera, et cetera. I just thought it was a cool move instead of just relying on more ghosts and funny things in the shadows and whatever. It's a different choice.
Yeah. Like a lot of like other horror films would have just stuck a ghibli thing there.
Yeah. There's a lot of fairly standard stuff they could have done to suggest that Payman was surrounding Peter and whatever, but it was an interesting choice to go with a light. It's different.
Yeah.
I also quite like the look at the dynamics with a dysfunctional mother-daughter relationship. Because obviously we never meet the grandmother, who was the head of the cult.
No.
We only get Annie's version of her mother, who doesn't sound like a pleasant lady.
No, she doesn't.
No. I thought that was really interesting. It was very sort of realistic, I felt. You could really feel that there was a genuine, even though the woman is dead, there's still this antagonism in the air between the two of them.
Yeah, it's like, I was gonna say the funeral at the beginning.
Yeah,
it is very much like you could really tell it was like something like the character of Annie was someone who'd like always wanted to like tell her mom to fuck off, sort of thing, and she never got the chance, and she, even though she wants to, she can't quite bring herself to.
Yeah, I think
at the funeral, sort of thing.
Yes, I'm sure at the funeral she wanted to say, you know, let's dump this bitch in the ground and get out of here. But it was interesting because earlier on, again, it might have been in the grief counseling session, but it might have been before then, that she mentions that she was estranged from her mother for years. And that she only recently, in the last couple of years, had reconnected with her or something like that. Or maybe it was when, I can't remember if it was, she mentioned her mother getting sick, or if it was maybe when Charlie was born, or maybe they coincide, I'm not entirely sure. But she had mentioned that they'd been estranged and then had reconnected. But even so, you can still tell that it was a very uncomfortable and dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah. And the reconnecting thing, that could have just been for, you know, demon insertion.
Exactly. Reasons. Especially if the mother knew she was dying. She's only got a limited amount of time left to get Payman his boy body. I mean that's basically the thrust of it, isn't it? They want to get Payman into a male body, and then Payman can do whatever it is he's going to do, which we don't know. We don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to raise more kings of hell or whatever? Didn't they say there were eight?
Yeah.
Of hell, and Payman is one of them. So perhaps now that he's got his boy body, he can go forth into the world and raise the other seven. I don't know.
There's nothing like wrong with what you're saying, because that is the plot of the film. But just hearing you call it a boy body, I don't know why. I just find that really amusing.
Oh, there's probably a more correct way to say it, but that's essentially what's happening. He didn't like being in a girl's body, so
demon wants a dong.
That is the takeaway
of this film.
I mean, they look fun. You can do all sorts with them. So fair play. What else?
Look, there's only so many times you can do a helicopter and then the novelty's gone.
Ah, but the chance to do that helicopter. I'm telling you, as a dongless woman, I've often wondered, what must that feel like? That must be cool. But like you say, once you've done it once, it's old hat. Let's look at the old notebook. What we got? I mentioned the wallpaper. It's so friggin' obvious, but I have to say it. When we talked about the little scenes, the miniatures that the mother makes, is quite a strong metaphor for these characters being puppets that are just being moved around.
Yeah.
Again, something I liked. I thought that was a pretty cool. There's so many little details in Hereditary that I just think are wonderful. They're so well thought out, and
I have to say that is why I liked the opening scene, because it goes into one of these miniature houses and becomes the events of the film, and I like that sort of thing, because it does, you do get, like, you know that the events of the film have been, like, planned.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that Annie's the one who makes the miniatures, because it's the women of the family who, like, make the plans in terms of demon-based shenanigans.
It is an interesting choice that it's Annie who makes them, considering it's weird. It's like she has agency, but she doesn't, if that makes sense. She finally understands at one point that something is going on and can't stop it at that point. I mean, I don't know if she ever could have stopped it.
Yeah.
but she does try to stop it. And yeah, there's just an interesting little thing going on there, that it being her character that does these miniatures, and how it does reflect that they've got really no choice, no agency, no, it's their destiny, it's their fate, it's whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's interesting to wonder if Annie could ever have stopped it at any point. Like, if she had moved, if she'd gone, right, there's weird stuff going on, we're packing the car, let's go, we're moving to another state. Would the cult have followed her there? Or do they have another sect of their cult over in a different state that they could say, hey, I know you were thinking of raising this other demon. Well, turns out payment's coming to you. See, there's all these questions. All these questions that I just think is fascinating. What else? I think I may have run through all my notes already.
All right, okay.
but essentially, yeah, I freaking love Hereditary. I think it's great. It's got everything. Cults, weird stuff. Little girls who like to play with dead birds. Yeah. Weird shenanigans. I like it.
In terms of the film, I really like the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
The rest of it is just a bit meh until... So the stuff with the seance and the stuff, that's just mm-hmm. a bit meh, okay, as it's getting, because it because the stuff about grief was so good when they start taking the turn down the avenue of, like, almost generic spookiness, it loses something for me.
Yeah.
So that bit's meh. But I think it's from when Gabriel Byrne bursts into flames. From the point where Gabriel burns, thank you, onwards. onwards from there is the bits that I just really didn't care for.
Yeah.
Because that was when it was like, okay, let's cram as much spooky stuff in it as possible. The thing I found the creepiest was, like, where there's just, like, random naked people showing up in the house.
Yeah, that creeped me out.
I find things that are, like, human and a bit wrong, like, really creepy. So, Toni Collette crawling up the wall didn't...
Yes!
No, that didn't get me. No. Because I've seen it too many times, and that is... That's too much. So it's a very thin line, but like,
yeah,
but just random naked dude smiling in a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
That I found creepy. And
yes,
in films generally where they have humanoid monsters, but that are very like long and spindly, that freaks me the fuck out as well. So,
When you mentioned her crawling up the wall, it wasn't necessarily that bit that it's creepy, but there was a shot where Peter's in his bedroom and she's up in the corner of his room, but you can almost see her and almost not. She's very dark in the shadows, but if you know where to look, you'll see her. And that's creepy. She's almost like a spider, like crammed into the corner of the wall. That's creepy.
Oh, is that where he comes into the living room? And she's got the white dress on, the white thing.
I thought it was when he was in his bedroom, but maybe it's in there. But she's in the corner up on the ceiling, and yeah, that creeped me out just because she was like hiding like a spider or something. She was all elbows and stuff. But yes, the naked cult people who just appeared in the house are way creepier, hands down. That's just, like you said, it's like totally normal and yet a bit wrong. No, I don't like that. It's the David Lynch thing of that's weird.
Yeah.
And I can't put my finger on it because it's almost normal, but it's not.
Yeah. was going to say, for in terms of David Lynch, and I'm going to cite a film which I don't particularly like because it's too incomprehensible for me.
Are you going to say Eraserhead?
No, I haven't seen Eraserhead.
Okay.
No. Mulholland Drive.
Oh, I love Mulholland Drive.
The bit where they go out behind the diner.
Behind the dumpster. Yes.
Yeah, and that is so terrifying.
Yep.
Just that is, because it's not even like a jump scare or anything. It's
no.
But yeah, that is.
It's that kind of
absolutely terrifying.
I'm probably using it in the wrong way, but the Uncanny Valley thing, of how something sort of looks normal but is a little bit off. I can't explain it better than that, but there's a concept of the Uncanny Valley, and I feel like Lynch is pretty tapped into that.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that's on the surface of things quite normal and everyday, and yet when you take a closer look, it's like, oh, hang on a minute, something's not right here, something's off, I don't trust it. Interesting. You're the only person that I've spoken to who didn't like, you know, the ending, or didn't like, you know, isn't a big fan.
Is this a prelude to you telling me that you're going to set all your friends on me?
No! Burn him! No. I just thought it was interesting that you had such a vehement reaction when I said, shall we do Hereditary? And you were like, well, okay, but you should know I fucking hated it. I was like, well, we definitely have to do it now because I loved it. I need to know why.
In the defense of, well, it's kind of in my defense, but like, you know, it's not that I dislike Ari Aster. I will if/when he does a third film.
Yeah.
I will go and see it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like Hereditary overall. There were bits I liked. Most of them were in the first 45 minutes, but there were bits I liked.
Yeah.
And when Midsommar came out, I did go and see that, and it wasn't because it was the Hereditary guy, because the second half was the stuff I hated.
Mm.
My feeling coming out of the cinema was like a bad one.
Yeah.
Whereas if it had been the other way around, I'd probably come out with a more positive reaction, you know. But Midsommar, I was like, well, it's got strange rituals sort of stuff. It's got a very Wicker Man vibe to it sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Florence Pugh in it. So yeah, I wanted to see it for those reasons, and that film I think is very, like, very strong.
Yeah.
And hold on, let me just, yeah, sorry, I was lying at an awkward angle there. that's a peek behind the
curtain there. Yeah.
Yes,
juicy behind the scenes.
Yes, I lie down to speak. yeah, but that has like a lot of like little attention to detail, like,
yes,
which was a thing that you said that you liked about Hereditary.
Mm.
I did notice it in Midsommar, because I saw that film twice in quick succession. The first time because I just saw it and was like, let this wash over me.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was so good, I went back and watched it a second time.
That's great.
And the thing I noticed the second time, which I didn't notice the first time, was, I think it's in the, I can't quite remember because it's been a while since I've watched it. But I think at the very beginning of the film, it shows like a drawing of like a clock showing the seasons or something like that.
Yeah.
And in the pictures, it has what happened, what happens in the film.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a, is it a tapestry or something?
It's something like that. But
yeah,
I didn't really notice because the first time I was just like, cool, tapestry. And the second time when I watched it, I was like, hold on, there's like, and it was, I think in like, I saw like, they were like very obviously like dead people. And I was like, oh, those are her parents and stuff. And then as I looked around it, I was like, ah, oh, this is what happens in the film. And yeah, so, you know, if he did a third film, I would watch it purely because even though I didn't like Hereditary, I liked Midsommar so much.
Yeah, I really liked it too.
That I would, like, I haven't written him off.
So, good. I'm very interested to know what his next thing will be, and I will be so disappointed if it's not essentially more of the same. If you know what I mean. I don't just want like the same story over and over again, but the same feel and the same, I guess, genre, although where it quite falls in the genre, you know, categories and whatnot is whatever it is. But yeah, I'd like him to stick with this sort of, I want to say ethereal, but that's really not quite what I mean, but dark stories that are sort of based in real emotion and real sort of grounded, but fantastical and horror and creepy and all the rest of it. I just want more of that.
So you wouldn't rush out to see the Ari Aster directed Clifford the Big Red Dog movie? That's
that might not be for me. Because you know, a lot of people, they kind of earn their stripes by doing these sort of independent horror films, and then they get offered Batman or whatever, and off they go.
Yeah.
And I'd be a bit disappointed if that happened. Just because I like his style and I like his sort of viewpoint, and I'm just give me more cult nonsense.
Yeah.
More cult horror, please. It's so interesting.
You say what you were going to say. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you then.
Oh, no. I was just waffling, really. I have nothing more to say. So go on.
I was going to say, I hope he does more like grief-centered horror.
Mm-hmm.
Because Midsommar particularly was at the foreground of it. But Midsommar as well, if you think about it, like, that's...
Oh, it's massively grief-related.
Yeah.
I mean, her parents were murdered by her sister who committed suicide.
I mean, I'll do it.
Oh, spoilers.
to be honest, I'm assuming anyone who liked
Hereditary would have seen Midsommar. But you never know. I'm so sorry if I've just spoiled that for somebody. It does happen in the first, like, 5 minutes of the film. So spoiler. And I shouldn't have said committed suicide, because that's not the correct way to say it. Took her own life. So yeah, it's massively about grief, I think, as well as other stuff. But grief is at the forefront, I think, for Midsommar, because yeah, her parents have just died, and so is her sister, and she's alone in the world now.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it too. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what his next film will be. Who knows?
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you wanted to say about Hereditary or Midsommar? Or
I don't think so. I think I covered everything.
I think I think I've covered everything. I would say, I was going to say, if you haven't seen it, you should see it, but we've just ruined it for you if you haven't seen it. So I don't know what to tell you. If for whatever reason you have not seen it and you don't mind that we've just spoiled the entire film for you, I would recommend seeing Hereditary and Midsommar.
Definitely both great films. Midsommar's definitely the one we've ruined the least because
Oh.
that wasn't the focus of the podcast. So,
Yeah, I guess.
you never know. I mean, there's two films that I've watched as a result of like listening to a podcast about them and having the whole film like in effect spoilt for me,
Yeah.
and have gone, "Oh, I have to see this film." The most recent one I am going to mention the end of the film because you have to see this. Doolittle with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yes.
That is a shockingly bad film.
It doesn't look great. And to be fair, I didn't like the Eddie Murphy Mr. Doolittle either. I'm an old school Rex Harrison Mr. Doolittle, Dr. Doolittle.
But the climax of the Robert Downey Jr. one. So, if you haven't seen Doolittle and you want to, don't listen to this.
Spoilers.
The climax of the film is after going on this far-flung adventure around the world, they find a dragon in a living in a cave,
Right.
as dragons do, that is breathing fire and generally being a menace because it's got
Being a menace at dragon. Oh, what a menace. Sorry, that's tickled me.
I think they say it's an inflamed. I think it's inflamed is the word they use. An inflamed bowel. So the climax of the film is Robert Downey Jr. reaching up a dragon's bum and pulling out suits of armor, bones, rocks, just all manner of crap, while this dragon just farts repeatedly in his face, and all these CGI animals are there going, ooh. Like,
Oh
and
dear.
honestly, I heard that was the climax of the film, and I literally was like, I stopped the podcast I was listening to. I was like, I do not believe that. That cannot be the climax of it. And I went to see it, and it was the climax that I was in pieces. I was just, it's the closest I've ever come to dying from laughter. I was just in so much pain watching this
Wow.
film. But
That's, yeah.
not a good
Somebody
film.
greenlit that. Somebody went, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do that. I mean, it's for kids. And who doesn't like a good fart joke? And I suppose dragons would eat armor and all kinds of crap. So it's for a climax of the film, I don't know.
My favorite bit of like behind the scenes gossip that I've heard is Michael Sheen's in it,
Right.
and I love Michael Sheen, and Michael Sheen is a genuine Welsh person, and
Yes.
he's playing a not Welsh person in the film, and Robert Downey Jr., for reasons that are beyond me, has decided that his version of Dr. Doolittle is going to be Welsh, and he does a bad Welsh accent. And apparently, when the cameras weren't rolling, he was like sidling up to Michael Sheen and going, "Do you have any Welsh phrases that you can tell me that I can use for the character?" And Michael Sheen was going, "Oh yeah, tons. Tried it," and he was just listing off these things. And he said none of them were real Welsh phrases. He was just making shit up.
I so hope that's true.
Yeah.
I can imagine Michael Sheen doing that. That's amazing.
Okay, it has come to the
Oh,
time, the
the obligatory,
obligatory and most pointless part.
the most controversial part.
the star rating.
Bloody stars. I will give it a solid 4 out of 5. Boom.
Cool.
What about you? Remember, I'm not going to take it personally. I didn't make Hereditary.
That is true.
I've got no skin in the game here.
Okay. For Hereditary, 2 out of 5.
Okay, here's why you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, two out of five. That's fine. Like I said, I didn't make it. So it's totally fine. But still, two? Only a two?
It's a higher rating than I gave Batman. And that very much has the advantage because that has George Clooney, puns, and Batman. So...
That's bat nipples.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Never forget. Okay. 2 out of 5. 4 out of 5. That's a solid 6 out of 10. That's pretty good. I don't know why I keep converting it into 10. I've done that on the last, like, 3 podcasts.
Really? And
I do. I don't know why.
2 out of 5 is 6 out of 10.
No, your 2 out of 5 plus my 4 out of 5
equals 6 out of 10.
Right. Okay. I'm not good at maths in the slightest. So for a moment there, I was like, fuck, did I get the simplest of maths wrong?
Oh, I'm shit at maths. I'm never going to correct anyone on maths.
Okay.
So we've reviewed the film. We've given it a pointless star rating.
A very pointless star rating, yes.
What are we covering on the next episode?
I knew you were going to ask me that at some point. I was looking through my notes, and unfortunately, the ones that are glaring out at me are ones I don't want to do. Like the Wicker Man remake, or Batman versus Superman. I don't want to. Don't make me do it.
Well, there is one thing that there's a couple that you didn't read out there.
Uh-huh.
That I said, would you mind doing? And I think you were less resistant to these than you were to those two, so...
Okay, hit me.
One of them is... can't even remember the name of the fucking film now. It has a stupid title. What's it called? Secret Obsession.
Oh, yes, okay.
And the other one was Cruel Intentions 2.
Oh, God, yes, Cruel Intentions 2. I will freely admit, I never watched the first Cruel Intentions. I was, like, the only person in the world to not watch it.
you don't really need to, but...
No, but it was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like me saying I've never watched Clueless, or I've never watched, I don't know, some other huge, like Wayne's World or Bill and Ted or something. Cruel Intentions was a big deal at the time. But I didn't like any of the people in it. I didn't care about the story.
You don't like Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Nope. And I don't like Ryan Philippe either.
Oh, yeah, no, fuck him. But you don't like Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, yeah, she's in it, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's fine. I really like her in Election. And she was good in Big Little Lies and things like that. I actually don't mind Legally Blonde. I watched that for the first time, like, last year. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've seen a lot of gifts from it, and I've used a lot of gifts from it, but I have not seen it.
Or Legally Blonde?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good.
I've heard it's like significantly more feminist than the title would suggest, but
yeah, it is, and I totally bought into the whole, oh my god, look at the poster, I'm not watching that, that's not made for me. And like, no shade, if that's what you like, fine, go for it, but it was just not for me, it did nothing, you know, it's not my jazz. And so literally last year, I can't remember what sparked it, but I was like, I'm gonna watch it.
Were you whacked out on ketamine?
Well, it's always a possibility, isn't it, David? Being the junkie that I am. It was probably more likely to be diazepam, and I was like, what shall I watch? that's for my back problems. I'm not just, you know, popping dolls for the sake of it. For anyone who's listening and thinking, my God, who is this Moxie with her pill popping and whatnot? But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed Legally Blonde. I'd say check it out. You know, next time you're bored and you want something easy to watch, stick it on. It's good fun. So yeah, okay, Secret Obsession. That's the Netflix original one, right?
It is,
Or it's up on Netflix, yeah. Okay, and Cruel Intentions 2. So not even the first one. Should I watch the first one first?
You won't have any clearer understanding of what's happening in Cruel Intentions 2. Because Cruel Intentions 2 is a prequel.
Oh, okay.
Which, if the logic tracks, then they're all below the age of consent.
Wow. So, I mean, that is part of the reason that I'm not especially keen to go back to Cruel Intentions, because, I mean, I'm sure they are over the age of consent. It's always a little bit weird being, you know, nearly 40 and watching teenagers get it on.
Well, if it helps, in the first Cruel Intentions, definitely none of them look the age they're playing.
They look older than the age they're playing, or younger?
heaps older.
Oh, okay. It's been a while, so I can't picture what they look like.
It's very much the Riverdale model of,
yeah,
I'm 16 and absolutely jacked. It's like, so,
it's the same with like Grease and films like all these actors are in like their late 20s, early 30s, and beyond. And you're at high school. Okay. Sure. Same with 13 Reasons Why. They have one kid in particular that I'm just always like, uh-huh. And after school, you're going to go home and meet your wife and your three kids and pay your mortgage. And because you are like a man. You're a full grown man.
Is it the sporty one?
No, he's like a... I can't even think of his name. I think it might be Tony. He's like a Latino guy with a leather jacket, and he drives a fancy car. And he, honest to God, looks like 35.
Oh,
but he's playing someone who's much younger.
The one who gives him the tapes.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I need to watch that. I like the first season.
I really like it. I know it's problematic, and I know that it gets a lot of flack. Oh, dog is joining in.
God.
Of course she is. It's problematic, and it gets a lot of flack, but I think it has adequate trigger warnings and whatever.
Yeah. Enough
to suggest that if you're upset by any of this, then you shouldn't be watching it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you know what the premise is about, I think no one who has any, like, serious, like would be significantly upset, for lack of a better term, think they'd watch it. But also, because I know the criticism was that it glamorized suicide, I watched that. The final episode made me cry buckets, and I was like, one, I did not think, you know what, I'm gonna commit suicide, because that looks ace. But also, like, fuck, man. She put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
Just leave them a voicemail. Don't use an outmoded fucking media system.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, did you watch it when it first came out, or did you watch it quite recently?
I watched the first season when it came out, and I was going to watch the second season as it came out, and just life got in the way, and I still haven't watched.
Yeah. The only reason I ask that is because after that was released, maybe, I don't know, 6 months later or something, Netflix removed a couple of scenes from the scene where she takes her own life.
Oh, okay.
So I just wondered if you had seen it before or after the edit. I saw it when it came out, so I saw the full thing. And like you said, I don't think it glamorizes it at all.
No.
I think it's graphic, yeah.
Yeah.
But not as I mean, I've seen way worse. And I appreciate this is made for, you know, young adults and teens and whatever. But I honestly don't see the problem with it, because they gave enough warnings and you knew what it was going to be about.
Yeah.
So there's an element of, it's not on creators to make you feel safe. That's on you to be a bit more responsible with what you're watching. Don't put yourself in harm's way.
Yeah. I mean, all they can do is like give you as much warning as possible. And then
yeah,
the rest is on.
I suppose it's, yeah, I suppose it's difficult because there are some situations where it's almost like purposefully triggering yourself. You know, there are people who will, like, for let's take the eating disorder thing for as an example. For a while there was, and it still happens, there are a lot of people who will actively watch things that will trigger their anorexia or bulimia or whatever the issue is, chronic eating, whatever.
Yeah.
In order to trigger that in themselves and to harm themselves that way. So I understand that, you know, as much as you warn someone that this is coming, they may want to see it just for that reason. But again, that's really down to you as a person and protecting yourself as best you can and try not to give in to the, I'm going to watch this because I know it will upset me and I know it will trigger me to, you know, stop eating or cut myself or whatever the situation is.
Yeah, yeah.
That was an unexpected tangent.
yeah, it was. So what are we going to do?
Yeah, what are we going to do next week? I don't know. Shall we try for Secret Obsession?
Yeah, sure. I could watch that film for just on repeat.
I'm fascinated. Yeah, I'm down for Secret Obsession. Available on Netflix now.
Yes, as far as I'm aware.
As far as we know. It was last time I looked.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Oh, love that film.
I know zero about it, so I'm going in blind, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. Don't watch the trailer because as in terms of spoiler trailers, that is one of the worst I've seen in a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Watch the film, then watch the trailer, and just think how much the film would have been ruined if you'd seen the trailer first.
Okay, will do, will do. So yeah, I guess that's it.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks to anyone who's been listening. We both appreciate it. That was all I wanted to say.
Yep. I appreciate it too. Thanks. Thank you.
We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.